Welcome, everybody, to the first edition of the ASHRAE podcast. So I'm your host, Jay Meyer from Jocko, and I'm here with Ryan Michelle. Ryan, we don't really call you Ryan, do we? What do we call you?
Rafi.
Who you with, Rafi?
With KFI Engineers.
All right. And our special guest today is none other than Jim Arnold. Jim, say hey.
Hello.
Hi,
thank you,
Jim.
So much for inviting me to your first podcast. I feel I'm proud of you guys for doing this.
I'm sorry to break the news, but this is our second podcast.
Second? Oh my goodness!
It's the first real. It's the first real podcast.
So a little embarrassing there.
We essentially did a pilot.
A pilot.
That yeah, guy. That's what we're calling it.
That was episode 0.6.
0.06.
Yeah. 0.06.
Right? 0.7.
Yeah. It's
almost there.
Either way, this is 1.0.
Excellent.
And so, you know, we wanted to bring you on because you're very special to ASHRAE. You're very special to us. And so,
well, thank you so much.
We are glad to have you. And just so for those that don't know you, Jim, why don't you give us a little bit of a background on yourself?
Like my history or what I do now?
Yeah. How about your history then what you do now?
Well, I was born in Columbus. I'm still in Columbus. Right. I went to Hilliard High School. Number one question I get is which high school in Hilliard? And the answer is Hilliard High School.
Okay.
It's the only one then.
Does that not exist anymore?
Now there's three high schools.
Ah, okay. Learned something new.
And I went to college for undergraduate at Ohio Northern University, mechanical engineering. Then I went to grad school at Ohio State for mechanical and got a degree also in nuclear engineering.
Nice.
My one and only job interview I went to was a finite element analysis company in Indianapolis. And on the way back, I stopped by to visit my mother, who is the service manager and dispatcher of Haslett Heating and Cooling. And so I was there visiting her, and the former owner of the company, Stu McCarg, told me, hey, he's just got a contract on this six-story building in Hilliard called CompuServe. You guys are too young to know what that is.
Oh, I used to dial into that.
There you are, yes.
Yeah.
All the weird noises.
Showing my age.
It's one of the first internet companies out there.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, you know, I really don't want to be a contractor. I went to school for engineering, wanted to be an engineer.
Sure.
And he said, well, while you're helping me on this project, you can look for other jobs. And that was 31 years ago, and I'm still at the same company. It's changed names.
So the same building. Yeah.
The building has changed about 8 years ago. But for the longest time, I was in the same building, in the same office. Yes.
And who's your company? Give yourself a plug.
Right now, it's Guttridge. We are mechanical, electric, fire protection, plumbing contractor in Columbus, Ohio. We're one of three sister companies. So we have a company Midstate in Arizona and the HA SAC company in Georgia.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, neither did I.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and you're also heavily involved in the ASHRAE Region 5.
Tell
the audience a little bit about your role there.
Well, I was Columbus chapter president about 2010, something like that. Well, and then I kept working, volunteering for ASHRAE. And so I worked my way up through different things. Now I'm what's called a DRC. So I'm on the board of directors. I'm a director and I'm a regional chair. So I'm in charge of all the ASHRAE things for Ohio, Indiana, and Michigan. And once again, anything in here, I do not speak for Guttridge or ASHRAE. This is all me.
Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah. So it's been a blessing for me. It's I believe in ASHRAE. I believe in all they do. And I can go on for a major 30 minutes talking about ASHRAE. But if we have time for that, I can tackle that also.
Yeah, sure.
I wanted to keep the format pretty simple, so that way when we do this week to week, we kind of get an introduction to who our guest is and what they where they came from and what they're doing. So Jim, tell me a little bit about like a couple of projects that one that really meant something to you that went really well and one that maybe you want to share some experience maybe it didn't go so well.
Well, to know that first, you have to know what I do, and I'm kind of an anomaly in our business in that. I have a professional engineering license, but I also have two contractor's licenses. So the bulk of what I do is true design build, where I've went out and bid on the job, won the job, designed it, followed on through as far as working with our project manager and guys in the field to get it installed and started up and everything. So it's a little different than other jobs. Every so often, I will do some true estimating, plan spec type stuff. Nice. But that's kind of in the minority of what I do. So it's worked out great. No one on the podcast can you know, see this, but one of my favorite PMs I've worked with is sitting next to me. And so he was always great on all my design build jobs.
Great guy.
Josh Bowen.
Oh,
and let's see. So the jobs I've done, I really like the best are the ones that, you know, I've, in every job, there's a speed bump. Sure. I'm not sure in our industry you can change a furnace without having a speed bump.
Correct.
So the ones that have went smooth, we did a lab out at Boeing in New York. Or, I'm sorry, in Newark a couple years ago.
A little bit different.
A little different. Way different.
Slightly different.
Although, yeah, you know, Intel's going out there, so Newark may become a more bigger spot here at some
they
point.
They call it Little New York now.
Yes. It's quite possible. And that was it was a great job. You know, that just went very smoothly. We put a custom air handler with a remote condenser, and everything worked great on it.
Was there something fun about the design that you liked, or was it just the smoothness of the project?
It was nice design. Okay. You know, it's whenever I do jobs like that where, you know, I can follow it through all the way. So I did all the piping layout, the duct work, you know, worked with the architect to make sure it, the vapor barrier and all that was great. And so followed everything through. And yeah, it was just one of those rare instances where any of the speed bumps were pretty minor.
Nice.
And so it was a nice thing.
Great.
I would argue the ones I don't like, just because there's always so many speed bumps and so many, communication problems with the owner or the general, or a lot of remodels, right? They always,
sure.
There's so much overlapping stuff in our industry that there's multiple times it's not caught due to communication. So yeah. That's always a challenge.
Yeah. I find figuring out the existing conditions for a remodel.
One of
the hardest, most time consuming processes in our industry, you know, especially when you're in a large facility where there's 60 other projects going on at the same time, you know, in a 100,000 square foot mechanical room. You have no idea what the capacity of the heat exchanger is at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Projects that are going out in 2 months.
Oh, yeah. And so 2 years ago, I did a remodel down in Cincinnati, and it was going to be a basic remodel. And the owner kind of expected, I didn't realize this, you know, to change out thermostats and that kind of thing. Well, it was a pneumatic system that was first done in 1972.
Nice.
And so that's hard to even get people to work on those systems anymore. It's really aging out.
And you're going all DDC from there?
No, they stuck with it.
They stuck
with it. I know. I'm shocked also.
That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah. But I would say those are my least favorite type of jobs.
I mean, yeah.
Absolutely.
Any pneumatic thermostat job, I think, is probably one of my least favorite jobs.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And so, you know, Stu McCarg, when I first went to work for him, I worked for Stu owned Hassel Heating and Cooling for about 10, 12 years after that, after I had joined. And Stu was a great boss. He did great. He sold it eventually to Jeff Floor and Bruce Ames. Jeff was also a great boss and a mentor, just like Stu was. And we were bought by an equity group who owns these other companies. And so right now it's going great with Guttridge. Everything is fine. And, you know, I would say the person who I'm more of a mentor spot there would be Richard Stover over there.
Okay.
So of the three people, I guess it would be, you know, influential type boss mentor people.
Yeah.
Stu McCarg, Jeff Lohr, and Richard Stover. Yeah.
Okay.
And even though Jeff sold out, he still works a couple days a week. Couple hours a day.
Nice.
So he's still doing great there. And so yeah, overall this is it's been a great industry. It's a hidden industry. I know very, very few people who go to school or, you know, even most trades and say, I want to get into the HVAC industry.
Yeah. I said something at the last CTC that was so interesting to me is that, you know, a lot of people want to go into cars, you know, mechanical engineers, everybody's cars. You ask them, how often do you spend time in a car versus a building?
Right.
You know, and that's what we do is design buildings.
Not only that, since we're so close to OSU and Honda and not too far from Detroit.
Right.
There's a big automobile engineering culture here in Ohio. But the reality is, you know, automobile, all transportation in the United States makes about 20% of our energy usage versus buildings are 40% more. And a car, how long are you going to own a car? I mean, most of the time, it's
10 years, 13 years.
It's not that long. The average life of a building in the United States is 100 years. Now, in Europe, they think that's cute. They're like, really nice. Oh, that's a 100-year-old building. Oh, gee, that's so nice. But really, if you want to make a energy difference, it's in buildings. It's not in cars. I mean, it's just
it's just the simple math, the way it works out. Exactly.
Absolutely.
And so if you're out there, you're listening to this podcast, someone pointed you this direction. Jim, what is it that you would tell somebody that might want to get into a hidden industry that might not even have been thinking about it until this moment?
First off, find out what you want to do in the industry. You know, the four
so many
really
multifaceted. This
absolutely.
Is such a huge industry that,
it's humongous. There's really four portions of the industry for the bulk, right? There's consulting engineers, right? There's contractors. There's a suppliers, whether you're a local supplier or a bigger one, Daikin, Trane, Carrier, York, one of the bigger ones.
Sure.
And then, of course, the ultimate, our customer, who is the building owner or the building rep, right? And these people are really our ultimate customer that we want to make a good building for.
Yeah. In each of those categories, too, there's also different layers, right?
Absolutely.
On the owner side, you have the facilities people. Mm-hmm. You have the actual owner of the building, right? Then you have the end users.
Absolutely.
Right? And as a design engineer, I'm meeting with all of them to make sure that all of them are going to have me, which doesn't always usually work out. But
absolutely. And even consulting engineers are entirely different, right?
Sure.
You're mostly in medical.
Sure.
And someone who does mostly manufacturing is going to have a different outlook and the way they approach something.
Right.
Someone who does houses, all this. There's so many different aspects of the industry. There's spots for everybody. And HVAC is one of these industries that we're suffering a massive lack of people coming in. And workforce development is such a big thing nowadays. We need to get more people in because we're spending more and more time indoors in buildings that the indoor air quality isn't really where it should be in a lot of places. The energy efficiency isn't where it needs to be in many places. And so we've gone so far compared to where we were 30 years ago when I first got in the industry. But we have so much farther way to go.
Yeah.
And we're really relying on the next generation to take us there. I know everybody, I feel young, but the reality is I'm only going to be in the industry another 10 or 15 years, right? We're really looking for someone for the next 30 or 40 years to come in and move us along the correct path.
So if you're just now getting into it, how do you know, when you were doing it, Rafi, did you say, you know, medical is going to be my niche? Or did you try a few things and fall into medical?
I think I found that medical was the most stimulating for the way that I like to work. I really enjoy all of the critical spaces, all of the pressurizations, sitting down with a whole sterile processing department in front of me, trying to figure out how each piece of that equipment is going to affect the pressurization of the space, whether it be clean or dirty. You know, I think it's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together, you know, because I've designed all different types of spaces, you know, higher ed universities, I've done the offices, you know, and I've just found that the medical and the clean manufacturing side of it was just what kept me engaged, you know, within my job.
And so how about you, Jim? You know, admittingly, you kind of were in diapers in this industry.
Right.
You grew up in it. How did you find your niche?
Like I said, it was mostly luck for me. What I have discovered, though, is that I'm a better contractor than I am an engineer. Does that make sense? And so I kind of, you know, navigate more towards that. You know, it's more interesting on me to not only the design, but also making it happen, the actual installing, the allocation.
Is it easier for you to grasp like real world concepts rather than paper stuff?
I think so. I think that's a part of it, you know. And that's something I would emphasize any young engineer coming in.
Sure.
I know, you know, engineers, their one product they sell are hours. And so every hour they spend in the office working is incredibly valuable, but it's also incredibly valuable to get out in the field and really get a hands-on view, you know, watch some of the people actually doing the job, you know, little things that most engineers I know don't understand the different type of, you know, duct flanges and stuff.
Sure.
You know, it's a TDC versus a slip and drive, all these different things. A lot of engineers have no idea. They can look at a ductilator, right? And they understand why galvanized versus stainless or something, but they really don't understand a lot of what goes into these things and the hours and the costs and all that. And all that matters. To be a good engineer, you need to know those things.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that kind of circles back to why ASHRAE is just so important to join and get involved in, because you start learning, you start meeting new people, right, that may not be design engineers or might not be a manufacturer rep, maybe a contractor. I know on multiple of my projects, I have a slew of contractors that I can call and say, hey, I've got an RFI that came in. How does this actually work, man? Well, what's going on here? You know, I have a couple of people that I can call and say, hey, where's a local site? Let me just go out there and take a look at this, you know, condensate pump here. Mm-hmm. I need to figure this out real quick and done. We can just knock it out. That's the whole networking aspect of ASHRAE.
You're 100% correct. It's
just so valuable in everybody's.
And ASHRAE, like I said, I'm a believer. You know, we've done so much with indoor air quality, particularly with COVID, our infectious air aerosol thing that they worked on and record time, all of our other standards, our training, all that kind of thing. But the biggest thing that ASHRAE provides, in my opinion, and the biggest thing that a young engineer, a professional in our industry needs, build your network as soon as 100%. You can. Do not waste, it's not a waste of time to sit in the office and get your job done, but you need to build your network. That it's an invaluable thing.
It adds value
thing.
To your career, it adds value to your own life. You know,
absolutely.
And some of my best friends are people that are in the industry.
Yes.
Well,
and it's, even sitting around over a coffee or a beer or whatever, and then talking about, you know, industry problems you've had, other people have had those problems or they have solutions, and going to trade shows. The ASP, the plumbing organization, was in town last week, and I toured the trade show and found three things that were, I had no idea they existed.
Really? What three things? I want to know.
The first one, the big one, was a siphonic roof drain.
Okay. What does that mean?
There's
some kind of negative pressure?
Yes.
On a roof drain?
Yes.
Okay. You're using mechanical energy to do it?
So Zurn and other companies have them. There's quite a few others that have them, and I probably shouldn't mention too many trade names right now, but it's an open...
Edit it out. Thanks, production.
Yes.
We're going to bleep it.
Make them sound just...
But anybody that's done field coordination, one of the bigger problems is the roof overflow drain has to slope at, an eighth of an inch of the foot, quarter inch of the foot?
Sure.
And you got to go under beam. So all of a sudden, before you know it, is taking up, say, an 8-inch roof drain is taking up a massive amount of your space.
Sure. 100, yes.
And so if you can reduce that to, say, a 4 or 5-inch, and you do not need a slope, that is a massive, massive change.
Does your secondary drain still need to be sloped?
No, that's what I'm talking about. Thing. Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it does not need a slope anymore.
So you're still dealing with the clearance above ceiling, though, for the primary drain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And your secondary is a siphon.
Well, normally the primary is pretty close to a straight drop down, right?
Sure.
So sometimes I'll offset.
The nearest, whatever,
Yeah, but the siphonic, you don't need to slope that one either.
Oh.
So it's there is a little bit of a different configuration around them. And I'm certainly not an expert because I just learned about these things myself. But it's amazing thing that
we could do
even
more,
after 31 years in the industry.
Yeah,
there's still new things coming out all the time.
What were the other two?
Siphon, one second though, because Colvin just told me about a siphoned sump pump. And I was like, what? He's like,
wow,
it's just no energy. I'm like, because I'm dealing with an issue right now with Mayo that in Minnesota you cannot put a sump pump in the bottom of an elevator shaft. You have to put it in a separate room.
Oh my!
So you have to drain an elevator shaft that could be 20 feet below grade, I guess another 3 feet below grade, plus you need the actual sump pump clearance. So now you're 10 feet below the 20 feet. So now you're 30 feet below grade.
Oh, wow.
It just keeps compounding, you know? And he's like, look, why don't you look into the siphon once? I'm like, not heard of this. Let's talk about it.
Right. What are
you talking about? Yeah.
So another great example of having a network.
Correct.
You know, you find these things out.
And, it's not, I didn't learn this at the plumbing thing. Well, I'd say one of the other plumbing things was there's so much of an emphasis on heat pumps right now.
Yep.
Domestic water heat pumps.
Yep.
And they're doing so much work in all aspects of that. It's really becoming a big thing. But I would say the in the past 31 years, the one thing that when I first heard about it, I didn't think would take off, became such a big force in our industry is VRV and VRF systems.
Like, we've done some guesses.
Yeah.
In and say, all right, we're opening up the phone lines
we,
now.
We got to get the phone line going.
Right,
right.
We'll take that as feedback.
All right, what do you think?
What do you think? What was the number two?
Number two.
Uplast for Driven Exhaust Fans. I don't
know. It's a good guess.
Yeah, just something saying.
Yeah, because when I got in the industry, VAV systems were the new cool thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What, right? Well, for those who don't know, what's VAV?
VAV is variable air volume. And so that's where you've got a unit. Normally it's on the roof. In most cases, it doesn't have to be. It can be an air handler. And it blows cold air all the time. In the summer, it blows cold air. In the winter, still blows cold air. Not as cold. It normally will blow at 60 degrees instead of 55 in the summer. But what it does is at the end of the runs, before it goes into space, there, you know, there is a box there. And that box does two things. One is it will cut back your cold air to a minimum setting.
It's a VAV system. It's a
VAV system. Cut it back to some minimum setting, say 20%, 30%. And if you're satisfied, it'll still blow in a certain amount of fresh air, you know, and conditioned air to deal with the people heat and all these different things. And when it gets cold, there's normally either electric or hot water coil on the end of that, and it will heat it up and deliver your air to the space.
So that's how you can get zoning and things like that.
Absolutely. In
office buildings, yeah.
Absolutely. So,
and then your RV, VRF,
mm-hmm.
you said that was how big it was going to be. So what is that compared to VAV?
Okay, so the way that is, it's an entirely different concept of a system in that you have a unit outside that you can get it cooling only, but traditionally nowadays it's a cooling, heating, heat pump system. So it's very much falls into the ASHRAE decarb type of thing. Though VAV also can be decarb, right? If you have electric heat, you have no need for a boiler or on-site, fossil fuel heating or anything.
The VRF is variable refrigerant flow, right?
Right. And so one of them is proprietary, variable refrigerant flow. But so the other brands are, they call them variable refrigerant volume.
Volume, yep.
The exact same technology. Yep. It's just each manufacturer has their own twist on it. So you can't take manufacturer's A's, most of their stuff, and plug it into a manufacturer B system.
Sure.
They're all largely proprietary.
Changes in refrigerant now. And yeah, correct. That's a whole world there.
Yes. So the nice thing about VRV, VRF is since you don't have to provide the total cooling for the space through your air from the air handler or the packed unit on the roof, you can do it simply with refrigerant lines. So you'll have two or three refrigerant lines coming out of your main heat pump, coming down. It normally hit a box, special box. It'll divvy up the refrigerant accordingly to where it needs to go. It's called a brand selector box, magic box. Yep. And it sends that refrigerant out to each piece of equipment that provides heating or cooling to the space. And so it's another great way of zoning. I'm more of a fan of it with remodels and stuff where space is obviously a major concern.
Above ceiling space, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But the other advantage that this is doing is, if you go with a VRV, is that, and the same thing could be said for the old water source heat pump systems, which are still a great system. We still install them. But you can decouple your space load from your ventilation load.
Your ventilation is your outside air.
Correct. And so you'll have a separate unit providing the correct amount of ventilation to each space as needed for each space. And it's another great way of handling
it. So really it's just saving on the ductwork size.
Yes.
And ductwork is one of the largest things above the ceiling.
Absolutely.
It is the largest thing.
Yes.
Unless you have a trolley car above the ceiling. Which I've seen multiple times now in multiple hospitals. There's an actual trolley that goes around and delivers patients' medications.
Oh, my gosh. No, so, I didn't
know that. Yeah. It's like a little tram.
I always see people walking around with like little...
The med carts, right?
Yeah, the med carts.
Nope, there's above ceiling now.
Oh, my gosh. It's
not a pneumatic tube system either. It is literally a
little rail car.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Going around.
I mean, that's great.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Cool, except for when you want to cross it with a duct.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're in luck. The MedCar podcast is starting here in a few minutes.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good.
So, and you know, I just want to take the time to thank you both. Thank Jim for coming down. You know, we covered quite a few things with you, Jim, and I feel like we could probably go on for another hour. Well,
we didn't
get
those other two technologies that you saw.
Well, we covered one, the water source heat pumps.
Yeah.
You know, the variable heat, different heat pumps that they're doing for literally everything nowadays.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you,
technology in there that's changing. I mean, you got an expansion valve, right? Mm-hmm. You're reversing the flow of the refrigerant.
Correct. But in the, even my house, the hot water is provided by, you know, a natural gas, right? Now you may have that electric, but, you know, in that sweet spot of which, say, Ohio is in that sweet spot. Our average temperature in Ohio is about 53 degrees, right? That's a great temperature for heat pump systems. And so if you can, instead of getting, 0.9% efficient to heat your water, if you can do that at a 180% efficient, 200% efficient, that is an incredibly big savings when you start adding that up for all the different mechanical systems across state or whatever. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Humongous big deal.
Wow.
And was there one more?
There was, but I'll be honest with you, I don't remember it at the moment. At the time, I remember saying, oh, I'd have to look up my notes, but yes.
Have you seen a lot of ice storage with heat pumps?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Not in the things I've done.
Yeah.
No.
It seems like some of the drier climates, the arid climates, those kind of seems like they're the ones using it. The heat pumps that with that technology moving into that space.
Absolutely.
Right.
Particularly with with Ohio, we have a demand charge on our electric when you use too much, and you could off shift some of that electric consumption to off-grid times.
You're basically going full economizer for a little bit of time.
That's right. It'd be a humongous cost.
And then bringing it back when you need it.
That's save a lot of money that way. I agree.
Yeah. Definitely cool technology.
Yeah, a lot of fun technology coming out.
All right, well, thank you so much for having me on your first real podcast. Yeah. We'll assume the first one doesn't count.
No, this is 1.0. Yeah. 1.0 with Jim Arnold.
Nice. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks again. And if you want to be a guest on the Columbus ASHRAE podcast, please reach out to me. I'm jamesm@jocko.com. And we will set you up because we are looking for our next victim. I mean, our next guest.
Yeah. And there is a prize at the end of these podcasts that the people win.
So. There is. And it's not a bad gig. You know, we specifically designed the system so that we could do it at a facility that sells libations or food or a place where we can get together and
some teasers. Yep.
Our friends can watch us and throw things at us.
Sure.
And
tomatoes are involved. Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes it fun. So, and if you want to be a audience member, look us up too. We'll let you know when the next one is.
Well, I'll be here for the next one, whatever that is.
Right. Just try to keep it down, in the audience.
And I'll play some generic bumper music and we'll get out of here.
Awesome.
Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Jim.